After a decade plus of ceaseless correspondence via a postmaster of dubious origin, Mr. Pynchon finally agreed to reveal his face to me, but only if I agreed to read all 58 sprawling hymns of Simeon's The Divine Eidos to him aloud. On the afternoon of November 30th, 2021, I began the task sitting on a nondescript park bench with the beautiful old Anglo-Saxon man on 9th and West 44th. But before I did, I said... Approaching the automatic entrance of Fresh Shores of Mineral Spring Avenue, hoping with all of my heart that their prepared foods were in the ballpark of what my mom generally discovers at Dave's supermarket, I glanced across the street and saw the old building of Kenwok Chinese Cuisine halfway torn down, and I took out my phone and made a brief note on the indefatigable impermanence that remains pervasive all around us, as I do each time a building I felt some sort of nonsensical connection with on Mineral Spring Avenue gets knocked down. So-called rope in an over decade-long plus dissipation process. The fact of the matter was my dissipation had extended its prime in a way that it was at once mildly depressive yet simultaneously severely depressing. Perhaps with that being the case, it was on the night of August 1st, the second to last night of my 35th year, that I experienced a dream sequence where I was suspended in air above a desolate plain, where a skyscraper-like tall building comprised solely of mirrors sat in the bright sunlight. Where a portion of said top corner reflected said sunlight in a violent fashion, and I found myself lifted to said section, where a voice I identified with Gregory of Nazianzus spoke to me malevolently of the futility of ephemeral things. A subsequent question, while there are a litany of instances of novelists attempting to ape the stylistic idiosyncrasy of Homer's Odyssey, while there's seemingly an endless line of English speakers and Euro-adjacent folks who shamelessly ape the Athenian baboons of the antique era without pause, are there any that we can think of that have mimicked the mannerist quirks of the divine Eidos? Because it recently struck me in rereading Simenon's central work that in many ways it reads like an epic poem come postmodern novel. So sternly, I began to write fiction on the assumption that the true enemies of the novel were plot, character, setting, and theme. And in this way, the sprawling, politically metered spiral verses of Simeon track the conceptual Hawkeian novel to the nth degree. Or perhaps vice versa, should we perhaps even pose the question, how acquainted was Hawkes with the Byzantine monk in the era of said quote? We should perhaps note Hawkes was to an extent a disciple of Nabokov, who in a turn, in addition to penning a few novels postmodernly prodding onto the deuce and don'ts of seducing underage females. Was raised in a Russian milieu, still pre-Soviet to say it is essentially Orthodox milieu. Modern novel, which in our era is essentially the postmodern novel because it seems serious. Modern novels no longer exist. Only spurious commercial modern novels that perhaps ate old modern novels poorly. No, today, to the extent the serious novel still exists outside of, say, thesis advisory boards. All serious novels are now essentially postmodern novels. And with that being the reality, I suppose I refer to the postmodern novel as just the modern novel. As there are no modern novels anymore, just postmodern, so the postmodern from myself and my peers is ipso facto the modern novel. To Hawk's credit, no longer requires anything of narrative, of character, of setting, of theme. In fact, even indulging in such antiquated attributes is typically a sign of poor taste. For myself, wouldn't it, which is hardly ever, I begin a novel with a fervent urge to tell me a story. I'll place the item back down immediately, at least somewhat discuss it in its brazen narrative inclinations. On the other hand, while indulging in bombastic dialogues, while tearing itself apart in perpetually appropriate fashion, perhaps the so-called refrain of Simeon's work is this very tearing apart. It's essentially a postmodern epic poem, which if we consider the many attempts to turn the epic poems of Homer into the modern novels of Sega Gold or Joyce, then it almost goes without saying that Simeon's epic poem is already a postmodern novel in many ways. As the addiction to pure prose of the novel, the addiction to the non-metrical methods of placing words in conceptual order is perhaps another lurid quirk of the novel that would be better off set to the side. Of the so-called Kontakion form, of which both the Simeon and Asigans are superficially bookends to, if not entirely indulgent in, is that it mimics the metaphysics of these Byzantines, itself of course being a poem and an essay and a story. The digressive hymns of the divine Eros must be all three in simultaneity, verses and stories and essays, because if they're just verses or just essays or just stories, no, that simply will not work. To describe a select hymn as a verse or as a story or as an essay instead of all three simultaneously, yet not as an amalgam, but instead as an individual essay, an individual verse, an individual story, in the same breath, to do that would be almost heretical in itself. Descartes noted, I think, therefore I am, Athanasius said, as the Father ever existed without his Son. The most important aspect of the divine Eros, what makes him essentially novelistic in perhaps a postmodern sense of the word, is that they're at once essays and verses and stories individually, but they're not amalgamous. The Eros is all of them at the same time, but also each one of them individually as well. Whereas Descartes noted, I think, therefore I am, the Kontakion is only an essay because it's a poem, but it's only a poem because it's a story, and so on and so on. Hawks, and I began to write fiction on the assumption that the true enemies of the novel were plot characters setting in theme. While Athanasius said that the father ever existed without his son. Isn't divided also of Simeon, the new theologian, a postmodern epic poem, and as such also the postmodern novel par excellence. Perhaps you would inquire further into this term postmodern, however, namely as to how exactly it's said to differ from the term modern. One of the more modern notions of our era in this instance, I'm speaking of modern. As postmodern, whereas previously, perhaps foolishly, I used modern as a synonym for postmodern. Is this conception of the Big Bang, which has achieved a jihad-like popularity in our era, perhaps the most modern notion of all if we're attempting to inquire about the modern postmodern divide? Is this notion, which has achieved a jihad-like belief system around it, of the Big Bang?
Now, personally, I'm not exactly a proponent of this notion, primarily because it strikes me as idiotic. With all due respect to the scientists who developed it, it strikes me as an idea that's attempting to improve upon a previous notion. God, but in practice, it's taking the idiocy of said previous notion, blindly believing in God and making it somehow more idiotic. There's an idea that there was nothing, then something occurred, and now things are occurring in an outward fashion at increasing speeds. There's an idea that our sensory faculties, which are unable to accurately investigate feelings in a bar after 3 beers, are somehow capable of taking clues from billions of years ago, and somehow empirically postulating what occurred billions of years ago, trillions of miles away. But this idea of the Big Bang is more alive with St. Descartes than, say, Athanasius. It's an idea that's essentially antithetical to the idea that a father only achieved being through a son, that the father and son, while existing independently of one another, only achieved being because of one another, that without one another, they in many ways cease to exist.
Found myself craving the classic cookies and cream flavor, and it's been ice cream in particular that has struck my cravings acutely. In our era, I now need more or less at least one night of indulging in ice cream per week. Yet at the same time, alongside this peculiar craving for cookies and cream, I found myself bending to an equally acute urge to try something new, hardly satisfied with this cookies and cream craving. Despite the fact this cookies and cream craving more or less just came over me, I often find myself saying things like, I don't know, maybe that chocolate chip cookie dough is good. Or what if I had a milkshake? I feel like, I don't know, maybe a milkshake would really hit the spot right now. Of course, the only result of such prevarication, of such mindless deviation, is the indulgence of non-cookies and cream items, and the inevitable remorse of the initial craving remaining unquenched. Nothing and something occurred and is still occurring. The postmodern novel, as well as Simeon's divine Eidos, do away with the first portion of this formula, disassociating themselves from this idea that there was nothing, and also from the idea that then something occurred, instead restricting themselves to the is still occurring. For both Simeon and the postmodern novel, something is still occurring. However, we're not quite as concerned with the idea that there was at one time nothing, or with this idea that then something occurred. Thank you. having indulged in a long day. All of my days these days seem exceedingly long, but also feeling as though all autobiography is absurd as fiction. We might say that while the modern novel says something adjacent to I think, therefore I am, the postmodern novel says something akin to he is a father because he eternally gets a son through whom he affirms himself as father. But this is perhaps even too speculative for our taste. It's in all likelihood beyond the scope of this inquiry.
Controversial as the median postmodernist ostensibly loves nothing more than flaunting his reckless atheism. What the postmodernist adores more than anything is to flaunt his atheism. If the postmodernist becomes peacock-like about anything, it's without a doubt his fervent disbelief in God. It is impossible that a Byzantine monk bagged the first truly monumental postmodern novel. It's an interesting query, although I have a feeling it would discuss Hawks if not Nabokov. But most likely Nabokov as much as Hawks, Nabokov, and I'm basing this up little to nothing. Strikes me as someone who would be loath to group your girl and dipping out into theologian. Curiously, the author refers to the father or the son, and this quote is off the feminine pronoun, hence the quote was rendered in English as she rather than he. Yet another postmodern element to be found in the annals, referring to the father in the feminine conjunctive in the 11th century, perhaps even the 10th century. So many of us to this day still blindly refer to the father employed primarily in the male conjunctive, yet I've never personally subscribed to this conjunctive conditioning myself, although I usually refrain from engaging in public statements regarding the conjunctive matters. As well as living on the new theologian, recognizing the, for lack of a better phrase, quantum character of our material existence, while the postmodernists have in many, if not all cases, tend to either form or support various crusades due to this characteristic. Simeon did the opposite, instead of proceeding completely and making no explicit political statement on the conjunctive character of his world. Yet of course there is a speculation that Simeon himself was of a conjunctive deviation, so to speak. Unique to his milieu, that of the unique, although we don't know this for certain. The world is quantum character, with no call to reform for simple, y'all know it was inside to rescind. For my part, I certainly can't deny that my personal predilections fall closer to rescinding. Not a week goes by that the thought of entering a monastery doesn't become at least momentarily appealing. The monastery to me at times seems like a second home, despite the fact that to the best of my knowledge I've never set foot into a monastery of any sort. Yet where could I possibly belong more than a monastery with few to no possessions and nothing pressing to besides monitor my own fleeting thoughts? Isn't the assessment of one's own waves of fleeting thought a full-time job in and of itself? How could we possibly have time for anything else if we're attempting to maintain a modicum of modesty with ourselves? Approach! approaching the automatic entrance of Fresh Shores and Mineral Spring Avenue, hoping with all of my heart that their prepared foods were in the ballpark of what my mom generally discovers at Dave's supermarket. I glanced across the street and saw the old building of Kenlock Chinese Cuisine halfway torn down. And I took out my phone and made a brief note on the indefatigable impermanence that remains pervasive all around us. As I do each time a building I felt some sort of nonsensical connection with on Mineral Spring Avenue gets knocked down.